From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2009 when a federal judge in Florida barred a Christian Educators Association from trying to overturn a ruling about how teachers promote their own religious beliefs in public schools. The judge wrote that school district officials are obligated to make sure that teachers and other staff do not promote individual religions to public school students. This debate began when two Florida high school students complained that school officials were regularly promoting religion and leading prayers at school events. But that has not stopped the Christian Educators Association International from trying to bring Christian values into more public schools. Recently, the Washington Post published a piece about this organization, which sees public schools as, quote, the largest single mission field in America, end quote. But the group's executive director told the Post that they are not asking teachers to proselytize or to violate the law in any way. In fact, they train teachers to understand the law and to spread Christian values in public schools in ways that conform with the law. So when a teacher asks, can I bring a Bible into a public school classroom? Can I hang a cross from the blackboard? Can I discuss my own beliefs? The Educators Association can provide answers on where the legal line is. For them, this is about bringing the light of Christ back to a country that they say has a decaying moral foundation. For their opponents, this is about pushing religion back into public schools where it does not belong. This hour, a conversation about values and what is in bounds in public school classrooms and what is out of bounds. Let me welcome my guests. In studio, a retired superintendent of East Rochester Schools, Howard Mafucci, is here. Howard, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Jeremy Button's here. He's a parent, and I suspect he may have a little bit of issue with the approach. He is an atheist, and he's got children, two kids, in Irondequoit schools. Jeremy, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And on the line with us is Finn Larson, the executive director of the Christian Educators Association International. Finn, thanks for taking the time. Welcome to you as well.
Fantastic. I appreciate the opportunity to share.
All right. Before we get going with this conversation, a brief hello from my colleague Juan Vazquez. Only brief, but a reminder that time is running out on our spring membership campaign, and we need our listeners right now.
That's right. We do need our listeners' help, and how you can help is by making your support, so your financial support to WXXI and your public radio station, WEOS, as well, for those listening in the Finger Lakes. The number you can call is 800-295-9994. That's the number, 800-295-9994, to make your pledge of support. Also, you can go to your station website, Rochester. It's WXXI.org. In the Finger Lakes and Geneva, you folks can go to WEOS.org and make your pledge of support.
Thank you very much, Juan Vazquez. All right, a conversation about, well, what's going on in public schools, and I want to start with Finn Larson just to help describe for our audience the mission of your organization, the Christian Educators Association International. Finn, what's the mission?
Well, the mission, I think, is real clear, and that is to encourage, equip, and empower Christian educators from a biblical worldview focused on biblical principles. And we believe that schools can benefit, if you will, from Christians being very open about their faith. And again, as you mentioned in your opening, the First Amendment is real clear that government schools, public schools, if you will, can't establish a religion. And we tell our members very clearly that if they want to create a Christian classroom, and that's what they want, they need to do that in a Christian school, that they can't in the public school. However, the public school needs to allow them, as part of the public, if you will, to openly live out their faith, to be very honest about their faith, and not compromise their faith. And that's really what we do. We believe that if you live out those biblical principles, you will actually bring transformation to the public schools. If you don't mind, I'd like to go back a little bit to 1789 just to see where we've come from. The forefathers, the same men who wrote the Constitution, passed their first federal legislation law in 1789, and they said that all public schools in this new nation would have to have three components: religion, morality, and knowledge. And they even went as far as to say that morality is built on religion. So if we ever took religion out of public schools, we would soon lose morality and just have knowledge left. And it was under that kind of legislation that our educational system did quite well. And then in the 60s, the U.S. Supreme Court said, hey, public schools must be secular. And that's That's really when that line was drawn, and it didn't say that religious people, either students, parents, or educators, didn't have a place in public schools. It was just that the government and the teachers represent the government can't establish that religion in that setting. It needs to be secular.
Finn, how many teachers does your organization work with right now?
Well, we do seminars across the country, have gatherings across the country. We're also a membership organization for Christian educators who don't want to be in the secular unions. When they join us, they get legal protection from us. They get professional liability. And in that pool, if you will, we have about 7,000 members. But we reach out to a lot more who just want our resources and our support from a biblical worldview.
Have you worked with public school teachers in the Rochester and Finger Lakes region?
I have not, no.
Okay, I mean, I assume that's something you're open to doing and perhaps would like to do.
Absolutely. I mean, we do have members in Pennsylvania, and we have members actually in every state, including on some military bases overseas.
You told the Washington Post that essentially public schools, or at least America today, kids, students in public schools, are lacking that moral foundation that you find through Christ. Specifically, where are we lacking a moral foundation?
Okay, that's a real good question. I mean, if you look at some of the biblical values, for instance, others are more important than ourselves. Okay, I think anyone who is interacting with youth today will discover very quickly that many of them really believe that it's all about them. The whole concept of the bullying that's going on violates every biblical principle that you can imagine. If any of you, and I know some of you sitting here, have certainly been in teachers' lounges, they are not always the nicest place to be. And if you look at a simple biblical verse like Ephesians 4:29, it says that no word should proceed from your mouth that is not good for edification according to the need for women, and that needs to give grace to everyone who hears. You can transform a teacher's lounge by just walking out that principle. And we see teachers doing that all across the country. Having a grace-filled teacher's lounge, it can change the whole working culture of a school.
When it comes to morality, violence, according to Harvard's Steven Pinker, is at a historic low in this country and around the world. Gay students increasingly say they feel safe and comfortable at school, just being themselves, not hiding their sexuality. Gallup reports that the largest shifts in cultural attitudes in this country have been those relating to gay and lesbian issues. There are anti-bullying campaigns in hundreds of school districts now. Teenage pregnancy rates have reached a historic low in this country, despite the fact that teen sexual activity remains roughly the same as ever, which signals that comprehensive sex education and access to contraceptives might be working. So are those kind of signposts, is that evidence that the moral foundation of this country has not evaporated?
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, open sexuality, I'm not confident is a good sign of value. Certainly all students should feel safe in the public school, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity. I mean, all schools should be safe, but it doesn't mean that we have a culture of youth that embraces what I consider positive values.
I don't know if you saw, Finn, and before I get to we're going to get to our guests in studio for some of their comments as well. We'll also get to your phone calls. Listeners, if you want to weigh in on what you're hearing, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Finn, remind our audience if they want to learn more about your organization. I know you got a website. What's the website?
Sure. It's www.ceai.org. That's Christian Educators Association International. And all kinds of free resources are available there. We would love to have people just visit and see if there's something of value for them.
All right. I know you post regular videos on YouTube, and you have commented about the conversation across the country, whether it's municipalities, whether it's school districts, about transgender issues.
Sure.
You probably saw near Myrtle Beach in South Carolina the recent incident, I would say, at a public meeting The story was essentially there was a student, a transgender student, who has been using the for them appropriate bathroom going back to about seventh grade, hasn't really been an issue. A teacher found out and raised an issue about it. And then at a community meeting, what happened was there were a lot of people, dozens of adults in the room, who were I would say just against the idea of allowing transgender students to use for them the gender appropriate bathroom. And there was one woman who stood up and was asking the audience to consider it from a transgender perspective. She was raising some issues. They were kind of shouting her down. And I want to listen to some of what happened next. They ended up kind of shutting it down by singing a song. Let's listen to the tail end of that meeting where the woman was asking the audience to consider transgender perspectives. So that was in South Carolina. Finn, what did you make of that event?
I wasn't there, but just listening to that, I would have to agree with the song that Jesus loves me and Jesus loves that transgender student too. So I clearly am not one to bash somebody that's having sexual identity issues. But there's also another side to that I think we need to look at. I recently spoke in Boston at the National School Board Association meeting on this issue, that we also have to look at the other students that are in a school. The whole transgender movement says very clearly that gender is from the head up. It's how you feel. It has nothing to do with from the waist down, where sexual orientation might take place. So we're talking about a bathroom. Let's say a bathroom or a shower that a biological boy who feels like a girl is asking for rights to be in the bathroom, but may be sexually stimulated by the girls that are in there. I mean, we also have to protect the students, and we get into a First Amendment issue here too. That there are actually some students and some families that have a seriously held religious conviction for modesty and purity, and don't feel it would violate their religious convictions to shower with or sleep in the same room with a biological male, regardless of what their feeling is. And so I'm saying you have to look at both. You have to protect students' religious convictions, and you have to be sure that people dealing with gender confusion are protected from bullying and abuse. And I'm just saying there are two sides, and I think we need to listen to both. And to say to a let me just say this to a non-Christian that you must follow the tenets of Scripture is just foolish. Scripture was written to guide the life of Christians, and what I'm saying is those Christians that are educators need to live out those principles even in a secular environment. And one of those is to love everyone, that every student is created in the image of God, we believe, and to treat them that way, regardless of how they act or deserve to be treated. It's this thing called grace that ought to overflow. And I would say that just what I heard from that meeting, it would sound to me like grace was not overflowing there.
And Finn, I just want to make sure we also understand then. If I'm a teacher and I come to your organization and I say, where's the line? Can I bring a Bible to my classroom?
Absolutely, you can. And there are Bible classes taught around the nation in high schools. The line is that it can't be taught devotionally.
Okay.
It can be taught, it can be shared. The teacher can read their Bible personally devotionally. They can have a Bible study with their peers. They can't study the Bible devotionally with the students, because when they're the teacher, they are the government, and they can't establish this word. For me personally, the Bible is the inerrant, infallible word of God. It's powerful. Well, that's for me. That's not for the when I was an educator, that was not for the kids in my classroom unless they wanted it to be. I mean, they clearly could live out their faith too. In fact, a lot of people miss the second part of the First Amendment, which says that not only can't the government establish a religion, they can't prohibit the free expression of religion. So if a student has a religious conviction, I mean, they believe, for instance, that they can communicate with the living God through prayer, we can't stop their prayer unless it's disruptive. If they believe that there's this thing called the Great Commission, that they're supposed to tell their peers about a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, as long as they're not disruptive to the schooling environment, they have a right to do that. The teacher's role as the arm of the government, it's different. So we try to get our teachers to understand that. I mean, you mentioned at the onset of the show about the situation in Florida. Those teachers crossed the line. I mean, that's why there was a court case. They crossed the line, and we work very hard to get our teachers to understand. Part of Scripture is also submitting to authority, and they need to understand what the local authority is, what the state authority is, what the federal authority is, and as long as they're called to work within the public school setting, they need to stay within those parameters, and I think they're good parameters. And my grandchildren are in public school. Quite frankly, I don't want people of other faiths to be proselytizing my Christian grandchildren. And in the same way, people of other faiths should be able to send their children to a public school, knowing that teachers don't have a right to pull them aside and try to convert them from the faith that their parents are raising them in.
Okay, but isn't it also part of the mission to actually eventually bring more children into Christianity? I mean, you say, a Jewish child should be able to go and not be proselytized to. A Christian child should be able to go and have a Jewish teacher and not feel like they're being compelled to consider that specific religion. But the whole mission that you have is to eventually convert more children, isn't it?
No, it really isn't. I believe the call of the Great Commission is for all Christians to be open to bringing people to faith. But that's done in our churches. That's done in our community. That's not done in the classroom. That violates the First Amendment. Now, the truth is, I truly believe that if people live out their faith very openly, I think there's a great draw to Christianity. I mean, a faith where you don't have to earn your way into heaven. You don't have to earn your way. There's this thing called grace. I mean, that's very, very inviting. But that conversion is not to be led by the teacher in the public sector. Now maybe that same teacher might be doing after school groups or maybe groups in their church where they're free to proselytize, and churches are free to proselytize, and students are free to proselytize. Government employees are not.
But if you're not fishing for students to be converts to Christianity, then unless the Washington Post quoted you incorrectly, why did you say, we're saying you can do a lot of things, it's a mission field, public schools, that you fish in differently? Fish for what?
That's really good. You read those articles well. Yeah, I was taken a little bit out of context, but it was fairly accurate. What I was saying is fish differently is that you display openly your faith. Let people know that you're a person of faith, and they certainly might be drawn to that faith, but you're not to close the deal, if you will. That they could research the faith on their own. They can go to an area church. But yeah, I believe it's a mission field. There are a lot of students who don't see faith as of any kind as being relevant, and I believe it's very healthy for them to see staff members that have moral character and faith is an important aspect of their life, and I think that draws students, and many schools have Bible clubs that are student run, and it may draw their interest to go to one of those clubs where they do proselytize, because that's what the clubs do.
Okay.
But the teacher can't.
Now, if I'm a teacher and I reject evolution and I say to you, it's against my religion to teach evolution from a Christian perspective, what do you say to that teacher?
Well, you can't work in that district, because you're hired by that district to teach the curriculum. The reality of it is every single district in the United States has evolution as a theory to be taught. Now, that doesn't mean that a teacher can't, and I know many that do. They go beyond the curriculum because there's clearly some science out there that doesn't necessarily back up or support evolution. They can certainly teach that, but they have to teach the curriculum and can't teach against the curriculum.
There's no science at all that would contradict evolution. I mean, right?
Well, that you may believe that, but if you look at a lot of the science under intelligent design.
I don't view science as sort of like believe or not. I just accept evidence is what I'm talking about. But it's helpful to understand.
But see, evidence is run through a worldview. And if you believe that there is no designer, there is no God, there is no deity, then when you see the evidence, it will lead you in that direction. If you believe there is a designer, you'd see a lot of the same evidence, and there's been all kinds of research doing that. Some of the same evidence lead to there's some complexity that can't be explained through evolution. But again, I know that's not the point of your program, but
sure.
But clearly, yeah, teachers are hired to teach the correct curriculum that is adopted by the board. They are hired to use the textbooks that are adopted by the board, but they do have academic freedom to go above and beyond that.
We're talking to Finn. Go ahead, Finn.
But if they use their position to force their personal beliefs, they've crossed the line.
We're talking to Finn Larson, the executive director of the Christian Educators Association International. It's an organization that works with public school teachers so they can help them understand how they can live their Christian values in public schools without crossing legal lines, without technically proselytizing or essentially breaking any laws. And in a moment, I'm going to turn the discussion over to our listeners and our guests in the studio to have a discussion with Finn. Last question I would have for you, Finn, is do you think atheists have a moral code?
Oh, without a doubt.
Okay.
I believe there are atheists that don't, and there are Christians or churched people that don't. And public schools need to be sensitive to people of faith or people of no faith. They serve them all.
Okay. In studio with me is Howard Mafucci, a retired superintendent of East Rochester Schools, and Jeremy Button, who's a parent. He is an atheist. Jeremy, you've been listening to the conversation. You've got kids in Irondequoit schools, two kids.
Yep.
How old are they?
11 and almost 15.
Okay. Any objection to what you're hearing from Finn about his approach to public school teaching?
Yes. When I read the article, I saw phrases like teachers are urged to witness for Jesus, the fishing, as you say, till the soil and plant the seed, ways of expressing faith. And, you know, a lot of these sound a lot more proactive than simply being open about a person's faith. They sound like they are kind of, it makes me afraid that, you know, I'm going to send my kids to school and they're going to be kind of targeted. It makes me feel like these teachers are going into this job with an alternative agenda, and which is not an objective education.
Jeremy, if I can respond to that, I totally agree with you. I got some chills down my spine when I read the article, too. You have to understand the article was written by a liberal media that really took a lot of things out of context, trying to sound provocative and whatever. And I totally agree that when I read the article, I shivered a little bit myself. What we really tell our members is to openly live out their faith and be honest about who they are, and when they're asked questions, be honest, but not to target children and try to draw them in a direction that they don't want to go. I believe that in the whole faith department, if you will, that Christianity is not just a system of doctrines or give you a place to hang out on Sunday. It's a way of life, a way to live your marriage, a way to perform in your job, whether it's teaching, whether it's whatever your job is, that you need to live out your faith to the extent that you can. If you're in a Christian school, oh my goodness, you live out your faith totally differently, because parents are sending their children there to be immersed in the same faith that they're sharing at home. In the public sector, Jeremy, you as a parent need to feel that your children are not being targeted. Now, is it good for your children to find out that not all families are atheists? I think that's good. To find out that there are people with other beliefs.
Their mom's Christian, so they know.
No, but what I'm saying is I don't think that targets anyone. But I agree. I was a little uncomfortable not knowing even whether we should be interviewed by that paper, because they generally do not look on face issues, I think, and
but
it's an open mind.
Finn, you're blaming the Washington Post, but unless they misquoted you, you said the part that a teacher in public school can do is till the soil and plant the seed. And all Jeremy is saying is plant the seed for what to grow. You know, his concern is what you mean by that is the seed of Christianity that is aimed at his child, and he's not comfortable with that in the public school setting. And you're blaming the Washington Post. If you said that, I think you should clarify what that means.
Okay. What I was saying is I believe that people of faith are planting seeds all the time, to let students know that they have certain moral standings when it's appropriate, to let them to see people of faith in their school, and that's planting a seed. It's not planting a seed to bring a child to their church, but certainly it's planting a seed. What I was saying is that the proselytizing, if you will, I liken to the harvesting of bringing someone into a faith. That's not what we should be doing. I believe it lines up with the tenets of Scripture that if we live a life that lines up with the biblical principles, that's planting seeds in people's lives all the time. Not to come to my church or to believe what I believe, but to show children that we need to show respect for each other. We need to treat people, as I mentioned before, as if they were phenomenally important, as if they were created in the image of God. That's the seed planting. It wouldn't be to win Jeremy's children over to the way that I believe, but that it clear. I could see you could look at it that way.
Okay, Howard Mafucci, retired superintendent. Go ahead, Howard.
Hi there, Finn. I'm going to put my superintendent hat on for a moment. And whenever there was an issue that would come up, I always ask people, "What do you want?" So, what's currently happening now that makes you want something different?
Okay, that's very valid. By the way, I was a superintendent also.
Yeah, I know that.
So I'll put my superintendent hat on too. One of the things that the way that we promote ourselves is a Christian alternative to the labor unions. I believe that many of them are doing an injustice to children. When I was a school superintendent, I never once had a union member, union officer, come up to me and say, "Hey, that's not good for kids." And if you look at the way the unions are organized in the United States, you have to join the local, you have to join the state, and you have to join the national. If you're going to join, and in half of the states, they're forced union states. That you if you have a religious objection, for instance, you can get out, and it's a hard process, but you can do it. But even if you get out, you have to give that money to a charity that the union supports, and I just think that's unconstitutional. So we actually took that all the way to the Supreme Court, but that's a different story. We want to offer for teachers that have a hard time giving money to organizations that support abortion values that conflict with them. We want to offer them an alternative, but teachers need to be protected. That's why when they come to us, they get $2 million professional liability. And if they have a job action against them, and you know what those are, I've issued some of those, and you have too, I'm sure, that then they have a local attorney that can represent them. So they're not without defense, they're not without support, but they're not taking their dollars and investing it in agendas that they're not comfortable with.
Howard?
Well, so really, and I don't think we should go off on this tangent, you don't want unions for teachers?
I don't want forced labor unions. We're not against unions. Well, I was a member of one. I was an officer.
They're not forced.
They are.
You don't have to belong to a union. You do have to pay union dues, however.
You don't have
to belong to the union. The National Labor Relations Board makes it crystal clear that you do not have to join the union, but the union does have to represent you. And I think that's the problem with the court case. But that's really another story. I'm more concerned about what's going on in school. In school, what do you want to happen that isn't happening now in school between teachers and students?
Want teachers to be able to not feel intimidated about their faith. And there is in many school districts an adversarial attitude towards Christianity. It's unbelievable the amount of teachers that have been ordered to take a Bible off their desk.
Well, and you know, again, I've been out of the field for a few years, so I don't know the latest case. I did try to look it up today. The problem with the Bible issue is when the teacher brings a Bible to school, which they can do, and they put it on their desk, they're putting it on a district desk, not their desk. So it does create the impression that the school is endorsing the Bible. Teachers have a right during their own free time to have conversations with other teachers. You did correctly describe faculty rooms, by the way. They can be interesting places sometimes. But what we're really talking about is when teachers are teaching in their classroom, what isn't happening now that you want to happen?
They feel intimidated. In fact, in exactly what you said, if a principal tells them they can't, that a Bible can't be on their desk, it just isn't true.
But he's saying the Bible shouldn't be on the desk, Finn. Not on the classroom desk. And
they're in the library.
There are a lot of books.
Shakespeare can be on their desk. Dictionary can be on their desk. The Quran can be on their desk. What I'm saying is that's the misunderstanding. There's this misunderstanding that separation of church and state means anything that even smells like faith has no place in school.
Well,
and that's we want to change.
Let me go at it a little different.
It can be on their desk, and they can use it. They can use it in their classroom to teach. They can take quotes out of it literature, poetry. It can be studied as well as Shakespeare can. And it is in a lot of curriculum across the nation, but there is this misunderstanding that, oh my goodness, that's a state desk. You can't have anything righteous on there. It's just not true.
Well, we're going to just have to disagree. We're going to just have to agree to disagree.
It's been settled in the courts.
You were
as long as they're not using it devotionally.
You were a superintendent of school, so let's talk about how schools work. There's a set of standards that we expect kids to know and be able to do. Teachers then develop a curriculum, and then they assess their students. So in terms of religion, where do you want religion to be in this set of standards and in the curriculum and in assessment?
Well, it's got to be. We have a nation that was built around religion. It's got to be in the history if we're gonna teach history. I don't want it taught devotionally. That's not the role of the school. That's the role of the church and the family.
So what's your expectation for, you mentioned Christian faith. Mm-hmm. Where does Christian faith fit in standards and curriculum?
Well, other than to teach about it, it doesn't. It doesn't. If you go back, teachers used to be required to worship regularly to be able to teach. I mean, we're way past that. It's not a standard, and devotional faith is not in the curriculum. Religion and the plurality of religion needs to be studied. What we're talking about that that we're not encouraging our teachers to teach their faith. We're encouraging them to live their faith. Big difference.
All right, if you're waiting on the phone, we're coming to you in 1 minute. Last question for Jeremy Button, who is a parent who's in the room, who's an atheist. You heard Finn say he doesn't want to target your kids for conversion, but he wants teachers to feel free, and teachers should absolutely be able to have that Bible displayed on the desk in the classroom. Is that okay with you?
You know, Bible is an important part of literature, but I can't think of too many situations where it would be appropriate to bring it out, really. There's so many other books. Why?
Does that show favoritism if that's the book that's on the teacher's desk every day?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, of course it does.
All right, so Finn, you've got an atheist parent saying that he's uncomfortable with the approach that you're setting here. And you said you want him to feel comfortable that his kids are not being targeted. What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, he should feel comfortable, but listen to what you're saying. All of a sudden, you're saying that we need to ban certain books that we can't be seen on a teacher's desk. I mean, that almost takes us back to the book burning ages. I mean, then we need to go through every teacher and find out what are they reading on their personal time.
Yeah, that's a different issue. You're talking here. You're talking about putting a religious book on a desk that doesn't belong to the teacher. It belongs to the school.
And the purpose is for it to be noticed. The purpose
Correct.
Is for the students to see it and maybe ask questions and to realize this teacher, an authority figure, is reading this book, that this is their religion. It's not just happens to be there, right, Finn? It's there for a reason.
Well, it's there because the teacher wants it. But listen to what you're saying. You want to jump into the mind of every teacher of why they have something on their desk?
Your organization says put it on the desk for that reason. It's not a matter of, well, I don't know why the teacher wants it. You're the one advising the teachers to put it there for the students to see it.
No. When we're asked, can I have a Bible on my desk, we say, absolutely. You can have a Webster's Dictionary. You can have Shakespeare. Yes, but we tell them right away, you cannot use it devotionally, except for yourself or with the staff. But you can't have a Bible study.
Got it. Okay.
But the Bible has not been banned from the public school. Almost every school library has a Bible in it. That there are a lot of Bible clubs, Fellowship of Christian Athletes that have boxes and boxes of Bibles sitting around the school that they give out to their peers.
All right, Jeremy Button wants to weigh in. One more time. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Yeah, I just have a question. What if, as an atheist, if I was a teacher, what if I wanted to have a copy of The God Delusion sitting on my desk?
Fine. It's still America, you know. I don't think we want to have any kind of rules like that. Now, if you use a book inappropriately with students, now I think we have a problem.
But Jeremy, if you are a teacher and you're an atheist, do you think it would be appropriate for you every day of the year to have one book on your desk sitting right on the corner as The God Delusion? Would that be appropriate?
No, it would not.
Okay.
And if I did, it probably would be my intent to have people ask me about it so that I could explain my belief system to them.
Of course. It wouldn't be a coincidence. All right, short break, the only break of the hour, and we're coming back to your phone calls. Finn Larson is the Executive Director of the Christian Educators Association International. He's taken the hour with us on the phone. Howard Mafucci, retired superintendent of East Rochester Schools. Jeremy Button, a parent in studio with us, and your calls next. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, comedian Larry Wilmore made some waves at the White House Correspondents' Dinner when he used a racial epithet to refer to President Obama. We're going to talk to leaders in the black community about how they feel about that and the use of that word in 2016. Then, we're having a conversation about autism. The author of a new book about the history of autism and maybe its future. Talk with you Thursday. To the phones we go, and let's try to keep it moving quickly. John and Webster. Go ahead, John.
Hi, Evan. Good show. Referencing your speaker's statement that it's all in the head and nothing below the waist.
Oh, on sexuality. On gender.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. What did he think about pseudo-female and pseudo-male hermaphrodites and complete hermaphrodites? Because just about one in every 3,000 births is an intersex baby. either pseudo-male or pseudo-female. And when they go to school, they do look a hell of a lot different below the waist. And their thinking is because of that difference, they should be allowed to use to use the bathroom that they think they should be in. And they might look outwardly male, but have the majority of genitalia female. Would he object to that?
Oh, if I can speak to that, of course not. I mean, that's a child that needs all the kind of support they can get. But see, the whole movement on gender identity is ignoring genitalia. And somebody who has both or part of both, I mean, that's a whole different issue. The challenge with, I believe, with gender fluidity, today I want to be treated like a boy, tomorrow like a girl, sets ourselves up for really abuse. We're just telling school districts, just look at this very carefully and make sure that we're protecting everyone here. My goal certainly is not to point a finger or to try to judge somebody who's struggling with sexual identity. That has to be a real crisis and a real family crisis.
Don in East Rochester next up. Go ahead, Don.
Good afternoon. Mr. Larson, it seems like all you conservatives always do is that you say the liberal media, in this case the Washington Post, the liberal media quoted you out of context, which is really saying that they quoted you exactly as you wanted to be quoted. Also, I would like to ask, do you believe in the separation of church and state? And if you do not believe in the separation of church and state, this can work both ways. I mean, you might be able to believe that Christianity should be taught in the schools, but I might be able to, in that case, advocate that the government close down religious schools, that the government burn Bibles in the middle of the street. It works both ways. Now, do you believe in the separation of church and state?
100% I believe in the separation of church and state, and I think it's what makes this nation so great.
But it sounds like you want to go right up to the edge. And if you get right up to the edge, then you'll want to go right over on the other side. By the same token, I can advocate that churches be closed, that Bibles be burned in the street, that religious schools be closed. Do you want that?
No, not at all. But what separation of church and state really means, it was a phrase coined by Thomas Jefferson. He was trying to say that the state should stay out of the church business. And so that's why we don't have a national church like many socialist countries. The government can't establish a church, but separation of church and state, meaning that the government cannot interfere in religion, which is why we're saying to our Christians who are educators in the public school that you can't establish a religion. You can't. You are the government. When you're taking that paycheck, you are the government. Therefore, you cannot interfere with people's religion. But you can express your own faith.
All right, Keith, next up. Go ahead, Keith.
I'd like to ask your guests just some yes or no questions, Evan. Do you believe in the theory of evolution?
Personally, as the origin of life?
Yes or no?
I've got to be a little bit more specific. I believe
believe the theory of evolution?
Microevolution. Clearly, we can prove that. Macro, I think, is questionable. And evolution as the origin of life, I think, is questionable.
All right. Another question. Do you believe in the theory of gravity?
Absolutely.
Okay, but you don't believe in the theory of evolution. All right.
Evolution is so misunderstood. Keith, hold on. Let him go. Out of muck and mere chance, man developed. I don't have enough faith to believe that. If you're talking about things evolving over time that we can prove in science, absolutely, I believe in that.
But evolution isn't based just on what somebody believes. There is facts behind it that point towards that. What branch of Christianity, because we're supposed to embrace Christianity, would you want opened in school? How about, do you want Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, Catholic Church, or the branch of Christianity that you subscribe to?
I would say none of those. I think we should learn about religion, but religion is that personal thing that takes place in your home and in your community. And that's why I'm saying that we're not at all suggesting that we devotionally deal with children. That they should be there for the academics and the support. It's not a place of faith, but we're not asking the children when they enter the school to leave their faith. We need to honor them, and there are accommodations being made across the United States for Muslim children are given time to pray when that's important for them. Christian children are being excused from assemblies that violate their beliefs. Other religious children are given assignments that don't conflict with their faith. We need to honor the faith of the children, but not force them in any direction.
Is that the same? Howard Mafucci, he's talking about accommodations for children. That's different than accommodations for teachers, right?
Yes, although there are accommodations made for teachers as well.
Okay.
But I think once that teacher puts their hat on that they are now teaching a class, they're using a set of standards, they're using those standards to develop curriculum, that's where it's a-religious. If a teacher wants to teach with a crucifix on or a Star of David, no problem. It's when they're teaching those lessons, if they're going at those lessons from a particular religious belief and teaching the belief, that's what can't happen.
All right, Mark in Rochester, next up. Go ahead, Mark.
Hi. I'm going to make a comment, and even though I believe it, I don't know how you'd implement it. I'm an agnostic, but it is hard to ignore not just the Christian faith, but the impact of faith through history and up to today. And I think if it could be done properly to teach kids not just about Christianity, but teach people about the history of faith so they understand the role that religion has played in history and continues to play, I think it would be a useful role if it could be done without proselytizing. I want my kid, I'm agnostic. But I want my child to be educated. You need to know about Muslim faith and their existence, the Jewish faith and their existence, to be an educated person. So I have no idea how it's implemented in a way that would satisfy all faiths, but it would be in that spirit of teaching about our country and the diversity. Knowing about the people that make us up would be good education.
Mark, thanks for the phone call. And I think, Finn Larson, just if you want to offer a brief response, you don't disagree with that, do you?
Oh, I 100% agree. I mean, we wouldn't be giving a good education if we didn't do that. I mean, how could you study great art without all the religious background that
sure.
the art reflects and history itself? In fact, Time magazine went even a step farther and said that we can't consider someone having a quality liberal education without Bible knowledge, and that's why Time magazine actually endorsed that all high schools really should have Bible courses, because great literature bounces off Bible, regardless of what your beliefs are. There's all kinds of allusion to biblical things, David and Goliath, walking on water, changing water into wine. These kind of things are alluded to in all kinds of quality scripture that are not necessarily faith-based. It's just a good, basic, liberal education to have a understanding of religion and the Bible, which played a major role in the formation of this nation.
All right, Howard Mafucci.
Yeah, and I don't disagree. Teaching about religion, I mean, we have comparative religious classes, formal classes in high school that kids can take. There's also comparative religions taught at other grade levels. There's a difference between teaching about religion and teaching a religion, and that's the difference. We can teach about religion, but we can't teach a religion.
And here's Bill on Twitter, and last listener question, and I got to keep it tight now. Bill says, teaching intelligent design as a legitimate scientific alternative to evolution is using your position to force your beliefs. And I got to say, Bill, Finn Larson is not saying teachers should ignore district standards or policy. But Finn, what if you had a teacher who said, okay, I've got to teach evolution, but my religious belief says I also want to teach intelligent design and I should have that right. What would you tell that teacher?
That the courts have been really clear that what is taught is up to the district. That's why you have a local board of education that decides that. I mean, teachers don't decide that. Teachers are the presenters of the curriculum, and There was a case in I think it was Dover, Pennsylvania, where they tried to force intelligent design into the curriculum, and the court said no, that okay. really that's not the intent of education. So what I was alluding to earlier was the fact that if you look at some of the research behind intelligent design, you'll find actually some of the same science that you find backing the theory of evolution, backing the theory of intelligent design.
Well, but Finn, I just got to say two things. I mean, I'm reasonably sure that is both not correct and not germane to what we're talking about here. But I've got to close here. Some quick thoughts. Jeremy Button, you're a parent. You've heard a lot this hour. Some final thoughts going forward. Go ahead.
Well, it sounds like it's kind of a switcheroo between the article and actually talking to you a little bit. It seems like there's been a lot of
Finn says the article misrepresented his organization.
Yeah, and I'm at this point, I'm having a hard time telling if that's the case or if he's doing a little bit of backpedaling. I don't know.
All right, 20 seconds, Howard.
Yeah, and I think Finn, we kind of agree more than we would disagree. Although again. In the article, it said that you believe that schools don't teach right from wrong. I think that's a false premise. And that you also said that schools are hostile to faith. I think that's a false premise as well. I think most schools put both of those in the proper perspective. Obviously, there are exceptions.
Okay, Finn Larson, 20 seconds. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity to talk, and I appreciate living in a country where we can be on the air and even disagree about some things. And I want to thank you for this opportunity and would encourage our listeners to check out the website and see. And I can tell you that I'm not backpedaling. I'm telling you where we're at and we're not moving from that position. But check out the website. And again, appreciate the opportunity to be on the air.
Finn Larson is the Executive Director of the Christian Educators Association International. Thank you, Finn. Thank you to Howard Mafucci, the retired superintendent of East Rochester Schools. Thank you, sir. And Jeremy Button, a parent. Thanks for being in studio with us and sharing your thoughts.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Megan Mack, producer, Catch Wars engineer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a wonderful afternoon, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.